Good morning. Okay. All right. Good morning. Yeah. My name is Morgan. I'm the director of teens and 20-somethings here. And we're going to chat for just a few minutes before communion. You're laughing already. This does not bode well for me. I recently was heading to my best friend's house for a barbecue, and she relayed this story to me later. She said, we heard you lock your car as you got here, and someone said to me, oh, somebody's here. And I said, no, you'll know it's Morgan. She's going to beep it again at least 3 more times. And sure enough, they were just cracking up when I walked in, because I just have this, like, are you sure? It's like a gut, like it's not even something I think about anymore, and it's not even like a cognitive, I don't think it's locked, because clearly the car is supposed to tell me when it beeps that it's taken care of the locking situation, but I just in case. I'm really being vulnerable with you all this morning. I also, they laugh at me, and just, I'm not alone, and I know that in this room, all right? But I will be driving away from my home and just get this deep-seated, almost nausea that I did not lock my front door. And I cannot tell you how many times I have turned around and just, it's like a drive of shame, and I drive back to my home to go check the lock, only to find that, of course, I locked it because I'm neurotic about it. And then sometimes I just have to walk back one more time, like, because I wasn't quite present to myself in that moment of checking the first time, and I don't trust my muscle memory all that well. Anybody else worry about these things? And then what I've noticed about this particular brand of worry and anxiety for me is that it tends to spiral, and it creates this whole narrative in my head. It's not really like, I'm not thinking, oh my gosh, what if someone breaks? Like, I start to think, if I leave my door open, someone's gonna steal my three-legged dog. I'm gonna be alone forever. Like it's a really quick spiral into just this existential dread and crisis that, like, if I don't lock my door, I'll be alone forever. Is that a quick process? No? Okay, thank you for those of you that are nodding. I come from a long line of anxious and worried women. I'm trying to kind of go against the grain, but it's clearly not working in some ways. I'll talk to my grandma, who I love, but ever since my divorce, anytime we chat on the phone, she just expresses this deep, she's just like, are you dating anyone? Are there any men in your life? Which just compounds the already complicated life of being a single lady pastor. And she verbalizes it for me. She's like, I just don't want you to be alone for the rest of your life. And I'm like, thank you, Grandma. I wasn't worried about that until we talked. And I want to talk, like, I want to answer the phone when you call, but it's getting more difficult because you just, your commentary fills me with a sense of dread and deep loneliness. Perhaps you could ask if I have good friends in my life who take care of me, or a community of faith who loves me, but it's a one-track situation. I call this the sneaky hate spiral. That just one worry, I don't know if any of you, probably you have different stories of worry and anxiety than I do, but just worry kind of leads to worry, kind of leads to worry, to then a deep existential dread down here, yeah? And so we're talking about worry today. You're welcome. I'm just going to lob that into your world. With the caveat that I know that anxiety and worry and stress are all very different things. And when Jesus is going to talk about worry here in a second, I don't think he's talking about the mental health issue of anxiety that I know some of us in this room struggle with. And so there is, for you in this message, no shame from me or from Jesus or from anyone else if anxiety on a deep level that you can't control is some part of your life, okay? Just putting it out there. Because Jesus annoys me a little bit when he talks about worry. I'm going to share it with you. just feel like we got to be honest. He said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is about more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds?" Ravens, by the way, were unclean, so they weren't even like the cool kind of birds to the Jewish people who were listening. "And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? If then you are not able to do so small a thing as that, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying. For it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, strive for God's kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well." To me, this reads a little bit hopeful, and like I said, a little bit annoying. And like at its best, like a really cool encouragement. You have worry in your life. There's no need to worry. God sees you. God's going to take care of you. And then for some people, I can imagine reading this, thinking, this is a cruel joke. For some people in our community, even, who depend on communities of faith like this for basic items, they're like, no, really, we have things to worry about. We have very tangible worries that weigh on us. We actually do worry about what we're going to eat, or what we're going to drink, or what we're going to wear. And so for Jesus just to dismiss those things sometimes feels to me not that kind, dare I say. But I think Jesus is saying something a little bit more with these words. I have a hard time with it, too, because I don't know if you know this, but Gallup does a global emotions poll every year. Yeah, we know. And in 2019, they found that 35% of people in the world are stressed at any given moment. 1 in 3, which sounds to me maybe a little low, to be honest, because I feel like most of us are a little stressed all the time. And this might come as a shock to you, but the United States actually leads in chronic anxiety and worry in the whole world. Up to half of us at any given moment would say we struggle with chronic worry and anxiety, which to me is strange in a narrative that says that, you know, that we have it all together, or we have plenty, for most of us to be so worried. And then honestly, I work a lot with our young people, and their rates are even higher. If you're a teenager in America, that rate is through the roof. And I can tell you that from experience whenever I have other professionals or parents or folks from our congregation say, what are the kids dealing with? The truest thing I can say is that at the top of the list somewhere is deep anxiety, deep worry, incredible levels of stress. And so to read these words from Jesus is tough. Just don't worry. Worry a little less. Because all of us, I think, as you're sitting there, you can nod, like, we have worries that are legitimate, right? Even for those of us who have a lot of privilege, even sometimes the fear of missing out or too many choices can weigh on us. I'm lucky enough, I was preparing this sermon, and I'm worried because I have a really cool camper van that won't start right now. I'm lucky enough to have a totally other car to drive around in, but for some reason I am allowing the fact that my fun car won't start to like ruin my day. And I'm just aware of the privilege of that, and that worry isn't the same for everyone, that there's kind of this spectrum of anxiety. But it affects us all on some level. There's even a new ministry I'm kind of obsessed with following at the moment out of Atlanta that is called the Nap Ministry. It's exactly what it sounds like. One of my colleagues in the world, a pastor, looked around at her community and said, "We are stressed. We are worried. We are anxious. We are acting like we are cogs in a machine that just have to produce and produce and produce and produce. So what's good news? What would a gospel response be?" We're talking about summer gospel this summer. What's good news to people who feel like they're just cogs in a machine, who never get to feel the weight lifted off their shoulders? Naps. And they literally lay out yoga mats and air mattresses in parks, in break rooms, in conference rooms, so that people can, when they have a few moments, safely rest and give themselves permission to take a nap. Isn't that amazing? Do you feel like, I feel like a little lighter just thinking that that exists. And you all are gonna pull up one day and there's just gonna be hammocks. If I have anything to say about it. Because Jesus isn't wrong, that I think we're actually better versions of ourselves when we're not weighed down with worry. I'm a better version of myself when I am not running back and forth to my house to jiggle the door handle. I'm a better version of myself when I can let it go that my car won't start, that I know that that I'm held in some way. And that's what saves this scripture for me, because I said I was a little annoyed by it. But you get to this last line, "Strive for God's kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well." Because for me, my worry happens when I feel alone. My worry happens when I feel like I'm the only one who's got me. When I know that I'm the only one paying the bills, when I know that I'm the only one checking the lock on the door, when I know that I'm alone, that's when my worry just shoots through the roof. Anybody else resonate with that? But this thing that Jesus adds at the end is that, you know what, there's a narrative in this world that says you are alone. And that's the narrative of kind of in Jesus' day, they would say that's what the nations would believe. That's the common narrative that people are invited to live into. He knows that he's talking to people who actually do worry about what they will eat and what they will drink and what they will wear. But what he's saying is, you know what that narrative tells you? That narrative that you live in is one of fear and scarcity and isolation. And what I'm here to tell you, what Jesus came to tell you, is that God's kingdom is not about that. That God's kingdom, as it becomes more and more of a reality, is that you are not in this alone. That none of us goes it alone. And when that kind of kingdom becomes the reality, becomes the norm of our society, then you know what? You don't have to worry about what you will eat. You don't have to worry about what you will wear, because somebody's got you. Somebody's got you. Every now and then I'll be leaving the house with a friend, and they've noticed my neuroses around the door handle when she'll get in the car, and I'll be like, "I'll be right back." I go check the door. And she started now when we leave my house to say, "You go ahead. I'm gonna make sure the door's locked." Which is the smallest kindness, right? But I know that I can breathe because she's got me. And that is the narrative of the kingdom of God that Jesus invites us into and allows us to say things in the midst of very real worries that we all carry on our shoulders. If we don't go it alone, we will find more and more life. And that's the story that Jesus invites us into. That's God's narrative. That's God's dream for our world. Is that as you look around this room, as you look around your neighborhood, as you have a meal with friends, you look around and you realize you are not alone. And that's the narrative I remind my grandmother of in the midst of her worry for me that I will be alone. Is that I am surrounded by people who remind me that I don't have to be alone. That I don't have to worry so much because I am held, because we belong to each other. And that's a narrative that flies in the face of what this world would tell you, that you're not enough, that you must just keep going and working harder to allay those fears, to take care of those worries, that you've just got to keep grinding along, that you've got to handle your own inner turmoil and just keep going in this anxious state. I wonder what would happen if we started to train our souls to listen to the voice of God, which is a voice that says, "You are already enough. You could even take a nap. You are already enough. You can rest. You can be reminded that you are so dearly loved. And that we then, as a community, become this force that reminds each other, you don't have to keep striving. You don't have to keep worrying. You don't have to keep that weight bearing down so hard on your shoulders. You weren't made for a life of worry. You were made for a life that trusts in the abundance of this community and the faithfulness of God. That helps me when I am worried. That helps me when I'm not sure if I locked the things. Someone just said, even your office door is locked. I was like, I know. It's the whole problem I have. But when we know that we belong in community, when we are held, truly, my sense of worry anyway starts to dissipate. My sense of shame around that worry starts to go away. So may you know this morning that you are held, that you were not made for worry, that in fact you were made for freedom and for love and for life and for rest. And may we remind each other of that fact. Amen. We are in just a second going to step into our offering this morning. And I just have to share a couple more things. You guys come up. And this is super awkward, and I'm not normally the one that gets to do this. But most of you know that summertime is kind of a low point in the budget world for us, and that is true this summer especially. So in light of that, I wanted to share personally, because I don't always get to do that. You guys know that I go on trips with the kids in the summer. Kaya, I hope it's okay that I share this. You tell me no if it's not something you said. Is that okay? I'm putting you on the spot. She's like, yeah. But we go on these trips with these kids, and I normally just get to tell you how fun or crazy or good it was. But at the end of each of these trips, we do this really sacred thing, and I want to thank you. Because your support of this church actually supports me and the work that I get to do. And so I wanted to give you this glimpse, which is going to make all of you want to work with our students, so come talk to me after the service. At the end of our trips, we gather usually around a fire, and it's a time for us to speak words of affirmation over each other. And I tell the students, these have to be true and kind. And everybody gets to go, and I've had to actually put a limit on how many people can talk, because it will go for hours and hours and hours of these beautiful words shared with each other. And after camp this time, one of the students looked at me and said, I don't know if she knows that she has a poet in her, but she does. She said, Morgan, in the morning, the stars go away. And at night, the sun goes down. But you are always there for us. And other students said things like, I just feel like I'm able to be myself here in ways that I can't be myself anywhere else. And I just want to share that with you because I'm so grateful that I get to do what I do because of you all. That you all, even if you're not sitting around that campfire, you are making it possible. And so I just want to thank you for that as we receive this morning's offering.